It's been more than half a year now since our lives were turned upside down by the COVID-19 pandemic. Schools and colleges shifted quickly to online teaching in the spring. Businesses that couldn't prove they were essential shut down. Places that normally welcomed tourists were telling visitors to stay home. But through the spring, we did not see the spike in cases that other parts of the United States or even other parts of Wisconsin were seeing. This fall has been a change in that story, as weekly cases in western Wisconsin, once measured in the dozens, are now measured in the hundreds. COVID-19 and western Wisconsin in the fall of 2020 is our focus today on the West Side. Good morning, I'm Dean Kallenbach. Thank you for joining us today, and joining us for the hour will be A.Z. Snyder. She is the public health director and the health officer for Pierce County. She's also a board member on the Western Wisconsin Public Health Readiness Consortium, which consists of 13 county and 2 tribal public health departments. A.Z. Snyder, welcome to the West Side.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you for having me.
Sarah Seifert is also with us. She's a reporter for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, specializing in the beats of health and education. Sarah Seifert, good to have you along again.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you for having me.
Later on in the hour, we'll hear from Wisconsin Public Radio's Eau Claire-based reporter, Rich Kramer. So, what's your COVID-19 story? How's the pandemic impacting your life? Share your experience or your question or comment by joining us by phone at 800-228-5615 or via email at ideas@wpr.org. So our aim today is to take a broad look at how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting western Wisconsin, but there are some headlines from just the past 24 hours that we'll want to pay some attention to. Here's one. For the first time ever, you just heard it from Hannah Haynes, daily COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin exceeded 3,000 yesterday. A.Z. Snyder, the last time we talked, we had you on about the virus, was in June, and at that time the daily total of new cases was 464. So why are things so different just less than 4 months later?
Yeah, isn't that remarkable? There's no doubt about it. Wisconsin is in trouble. We are currently second in the nation for the daily new cases per 100,000 population over the past 7 days. It's a complex answer, but in Pierce County, we are seeing many cases associated with the reopening of our local university and our local K-12 schools.
On the same day in June when we talked last, the 16 counties in west central Wisconsin that are part of our listening area had recorded a total of 788 cases. That was for the entire length of the pandemic. As of yesterday, those same 16 counties report 11 times that number, and most of that growth has come since early September. The number of cases has increased 79% in the past month. 3 counties have totals that are more than double in the past month, those counties being Burnett, Rusk, and Jackson. Dunn County has seen their case number triple in the last month. That's lots and lots of numbers. But what it means is that the pandemic is now real in western Wisconsin. A.Z. Snyder, talk about how this is playing in Pierce County.
Yeah, so we, in September, we saw cases at fourfold, a level that we'd ever seen before in a single week. Largely, that spike was attributed to cases associated with our UWRF, University of Wisconsin River Falls campus, but they were not solely responsible for the spike in cases. We were also seeing many cases identified as part of testing initiatives for students in K-12 schools who were experiencing symptoms. That quickly overwhelmed our local capacity to do contact tracing and disease investigation. That puts everybody at risk when local health departments are overwhelmed. We were so concerned, and we should still be concerned this spring, about overwhelming local hospital capacity. But now we're overwhelming local public health capacity in all areas of the state, and the public doesn't seem to understand universally why that is so dangerous. You don't want to put your local health departments in a situation where we cannot, in a timely manner, reach out to every positive case, identify all their close contacts, and identify and call those close contacts to let them know that they've been exposed and need to quarantine and stop the cycle of infection. So while we're yes, we're very concerned about hospitals potentially becoming overwhelmed, as we're seeing in the Fox Valley region. We also need to be worried about our local health departments and their capacity to stop the spread of this disease.
There are several elements in what you've said there that we're going to be unpacking through the hour. But Sarah Seifert, I want to turn to you now. You covered a news conference yesterday by the Eau Claire City County Health Department. Last month was brutal for Eau Claire County, more than 1,000 cases in September alone. What are the ramifications of that September surge in the Chippewa Valley?
So I think the most immediate ramification is that contact tracing is affected. Like AZ was just talking about, at this point, the Eau Claire Health Department is saying contact tracing phone calls, which typically would come from a contact tracer, a staffer with the health department, those calls might come from either Eau Claire, from a local school district. It could even be your friend or your family member. The health department is asking people who test positive, please get in touch with your immediate contacts and tell them that they have to quarantine for 14 days. You know, they keep hammering this point that it is absolutely vital that people stay home for 14 days to kind of close the circle of that disease spread. They said that's one of the reasons why cases have gone up so quickly in September, like you said. And there's also been some talk about what are we going to do if hospitalizations continue to go up. Local medical directors have come to us and said hospitalizations are going up. We're not at the point of Eastern Wisconsin right now, but we are planning for those to go up, you know, especially looking forward into flu season this winter.
Late summer would normally be a time when there isn't that much respiratory illness. I mean, colds and flus are really down at that time of the year. Is that a concern, the fact that all of this is happening, and now we're moving into the time of the year when those respiratory illnesses become more common? Sarah Seifert, did the director of the Eau Claire City County Health Department, Lise Kagizi, comment on that at all?
She has. She has repeatedly, and I think either yesterday or last week, really said it is remarkable. It's really remarkable how this virus, which is a respiratory virus, exactly like you said, normally we see those hot seasons in winter and early spring. But the fact that this virus is spreading so quickly and so easily, in this warm humid summer we saw, that's really worrying people. And I think it's worrying health experts too, kind of looking ahead, because we do normally have people hospitalized. We do have deaths from influenza every year. So they're looking ahead and saying, well, if we're starting to worry about hospitalizations now, what is this going to look like in January or February?
As of yesterday, that death total from the coronavirus for those 16 counties in western Wisconsin went to 55. Now, that means the percentage of the cases in the region that result in death is 0.6%. So, in other words, of the 8,000-plus cases in the 16-county area, 55 have resulted in death. That's about one-third of the rate nationally. AZ Snyder, has there been any conversation, any idea why the death rate appears to be significantly less in western Wisconsin than it has been elsewhere in the nation?
So I think that's largely due to the epidemiology of the surge in cases. We are seeing the majority of our cases, our largest age group is that 18 to 24-year-old age group. They tend to have more mild symptoms and tend to have less underlying health conditions that would potentially cause adverse reactions. But what we need to remember is, while the mortality rate is important, certainly, to look at, it may not seem like a big deal that a healthy college student becomes infected, but we are all only a few degrees of separation away from healthcare workers, nursing home residents, and people who may be at higher risk. Those college students are going to infect their roommates who may work as a nursing student and does rotations in a long-term care facility. Those college students work in childcare facilities that serve healthcare workers, or they might come home over the holiday and infect their parents or grandparents. So we need to remember that even though we're not seeing a high mortality right now, that could change very rapidly just based on the way this virus spreads.
Could that lower mortality rate have anything to do with the fact that the pandemic hit us later than others, and maybe some of the treatment methods are tested a little more than they were back in March or April?
That's certainly could be the case. We've learned a lot about this virus. We do have some treatment options available to us that we didn't have before. We also have better surge capacity in terms of staffing and supplies in our local hospitals than we did in the spring.
Yeah, speaking of the hospitals, A.Z. Snyder, you're on the board of the Western Wisconsin Public Health Readiness Consortium, and we heard in Hannah's report earlier that 110 people were hospitalized from coronavirus statewide yesterday. Considering the recent boom in cases, what's your perspective on the readiness of our hospitals and healthcare system to manage the pandemic?
We've certainly come a long way since the spring, but a large surge in cases would quickly overwhelm our healthcare system in Western Wisconsin. Listen, we have a lot of rural healthcare organizations that are pretty small in Western and Northwest Wisconsin. It is absolutely vital that we do our part as community members to protect these resources to ensure that we can meet these ongoing health care needs of all of our population. High levels of disease in our community is a threat to hospital capacity, but not just because of bed availability. The amount of disease in our community is causing healthcare workers to be excluded because of quarantine or isolation, and that's causing staff shortages. So healthcare workers, because of this really high amount of disease in our community, are being exposed in their personal lives through no fault of their own, or their children are being excluded from school as close contacts and they need to stay home to care for them. And we don't want our healthcare workers to have to come to work to provide direct patient care while they're in their quarantine period, but we won't have another choice if we can't bring the level of disease in our community down.
Sarah Seifert, in your reporting, what's the status of testing in our region? Are people who are needing the tests getting them? And what about people who just want the test for their own peace of mind?
That's an interesting sort of question between people who want the test but might not have symptoms and people who have symptoms but might not be getting a test. So testing right now in the Eau Claire County area, it's ramped up since September 1st for sure, but it's not ramped up at the same rapid exponential rate that cases did, which isn't good news for our ability to track the virus in just the general Chippewa Valley area. There are some things being done to address this. Wisconsin National Guard has set up a three-day-a-week testing site on the west side of Eau Claire County, and that's going to be there until December 7th, which that's for folks who have symptoms of COVID-19 or who have been the contact of someone who has tested positive. It's free. People don't need insurance. It's a drive-through. You can register online. I got tested there last week, and it was very quick. I think it took about a minute and a half. So some things are being done, but testing certainly has not ramped up to the degree that cases have.
A.Z. Snyder, you referred earlier to the pressure on public health offices to do contact tracing. Can you give us just maybe a two-minute version of what that means? In other words, when you're trying to do contact tracing, what exactly are you what is your staff going through? What are you trying to do?
Sure. So in the absence of a pharmaceutical intervention like a vaccine, contact tracing, quarantine, and isolation are the best interventions we have available to us. So what happens is we get a positive reported to us through the system called WEDS, which is an electronic system that healthcare providers report test results into. Once we do that, we see the person's name, phone number, we analyze their test result to ensure it's a positive. We call that person and we have a long conversation with them to understand how the virus came to them, so looking for that source of infection, and then where the virus may have gone next. So looking at the people that they were within 6 feet of for greater than 15 minutes during their infectious period. Some people are able to tell us right away all of their close contacts in their personal life and in their work life. Others are either unable or unwilling to provide that information. And every time we are unable to identify and contact one of those close contacts, we're opening up a small door for the virus to continue spreading.
Our guests are reporter Sarah Seifert of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and Pierce County Public Health Director A.Z. Snyder. Coming up after the break, we'll bring in WPR reporter Rich Kramer to talk about how higher education in Western Wisconsin is being impacted by COVID-19 and how they're impacting the rest of us. Add to the conversation by sharing your comment or telling your story about how you are or aren't coping with the pandemic. 800-228-5615 is the number to call, 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas at WPR.org, ideas at WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on The West Side with an update on the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic in western Wisconsin. Sarah Seifert of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and A.Z. Snyder of the Pierce County Health Department stay with us. And we're joined for the next few minutes by Rich Kramer. He's WPR's Eau Claire-based reporter, and he has the higher education beat at Wisconsin Public Radio as well. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning, Dean.
So University of Wisconsin campuses reopened with in-person campuses for the fall semester last month. That was after students were sent home during the spring semester to finish their classes online. Some faculty, students, and county officials have criticized the decision to reopen, and some chancellors and administrators are standing by it. So what was the rationale that caused the UW administration to decide to hold in-person classes this fall?
Well, in a nutshell, the response from administration, both at the campus level and at the system central office level, was that, you know, they would have the testing capabilities, the spaces for isolation and quarantine on campus to be able to manage any sorts of outbreak. But it is interesting when you look back through the rest of the year. In spring, we had very few cases in Wisconsin, you know, when campuses decided to send everyone home. And I think that part of that was because of the governor's safer at home order that basically banned gatherings of, you know, 10 or more people. So I think that definitely had an impact. Who knows what campuses would have done if that hadn't have gone into effect. So in this fall, yeah, definitely they said that they'd be able to manage the disease. They expected increases, you know, in terms of test positivity rates per day. And at least three campuses seem to have been surprised by the numbers that shot up pretty quickly within the first week or so of classes. UW River Falls, of course, went online. So did UW La Crosse, and UW Madison went online for a two-week period to try to cool things off. And it so far, it appears to be working.
Yeah, the positive case numbers spiked in counties with UW campuses, including Pierce, Eau Claire, Dunn, and Barron counties in this region right after the semester started. How have the campuses responded to those spikes so far as far as, you know, what are they doing as far as all the things that sort of need to happen having to do with quarantining, contact tracing? How do they make that work?
Well, I think here's a case in point. UW River Falls, I talked with the chancellor this week about how the interim chancellor, Connie Foster, that is, on how the cases seem to have been going down after their two-week pause. The way they responded to it was they had set aside these rooms, you know, dorm rooms, hotel spaces off campus for potential people. You've got either people that need to be isolated, and those are the ones that test positive. They need to be isolated for 2 weeks. Then you've got those that need to be quarantined, and those are people that might have been exposed to someone that was positive, and they also need to sit out for 2 weeks. But what I heard was pretty interesting. The campus had been working with local hotels in River Falls to kind of house some of these students. The hotels were willing to take people that needed to be quarantined that weren't, you know, absolutely testing positive, but they were not so willing to take people that were positive. So during that two-week pause, what UW River Falls did was they moved everybody out of one of their dorms and kind of moved them into vacant spaces in other dorms. So now that one whole dorm is set aside for isolation and quarantine. And Chancellor Foster told me that they just didn't have the capacity to do the quarantining and the isolation. Also, a lot of campuses were slow to ramp up testing. There have been huge supply issues in terms of what are known as PCR tests. Those are the tests where they go deep into the nose with those long swabs, and those are used for diagnosis. The other type of testing that the UW has really pushed, and really it's a cornerstone of their entire approach to managing the disease through the semester is what's called antigen testing, and that's a little less accurate. Depending on when you test a student, it detects proteins in the virus. And they're using antigen testing at all the campuses for surveillance, but what I learned is that the campuses weren't ready to be able to test all of the dorm room students every 2 weeks. Some are still ramping that up. At UW-Eau Claire, for example, I heard that just the staffing power that was needed to do that sort of testing, to do 400 tests per day for their, almost 4,000 students in the dorm rooms, they were enlisting coaches, athletic trainers, pretty much everyone on hand. That one of the equity and diversity and inclusion officers was running the lab because they had a retirement recently in the health center. So it took them a while to ramp up, but it seems like a lot of the campuses have at least the antigen testing capabilities now. The PCR tests are still kind of sporadic in terms of numbers on campuses, and I'm not sure why that is. It could be a supply issue. There's a lot of people that are asking for these very same tests all at the same time.
A.Z. Snyder, Rich mentioned UW-River Falls. You were right in the middle of that as Pierce County Health Officer and Health Director, and talked about their moving classes indoors for 2 weeks. Talk about your involvement with them and how much you interact with the administration there to try to put together something that works not only for the university but for the surrounding community.
So I've been working very closely. There's not a single day that goes by without me talking to UWRF staff members. We've been working together since the spring on developing a back-to-campus plan. I am extremely proud of the relationship between UWRF and Pierce County Public Health. We developed joint testing plans, quarantine isolation plans, and they have devoted a fairly large team of contact tracers and disease investigators that work under my authority as the health officer to do disease investigations and contact tracing for all of their students. We did not anticipate, neither Pierce County nor UWRF anticipated, that we would have a huge spike in cases just one incubation period after students return to campus. I am very thankful for Dr. Foster's counsel and her involving the health department in making those decisions. And she did call me before they decided to do the shelter in place. And we had a good conversation about whether or not that was the right thing to do. We both agreed ultimately it was. We're starting to do testing right now for students returning to campus after this two-week period, and we do have a relatively low positivity rate so far. Now, the real test is going to be what happens in one or two incubation periods after today, and that's something we're very closely monitoring in partnership with our UWRF team.
A UW-Eau Claire student that I know had a roommate. She lived off campus. Her roommate tested positive, so she had to quarantine for 2 weeks. And she was going to quarantine in place, but she couldn't get tested for 3 or 4 days. And so she went home to her Minnesota home where she could get a test at her doctor's office right away. I know in some universities they were asking students who had to quarantine to stay put. In others, they were encouraging to go home. Sarah Seifert, any sense from you as to how much the health leaders in Dunn and Eau Claire counties attributed the spikes there to the reopening of the universities? And from your perspective, have you seen any consistency in how they're managing students who test positive or students who are in contact with someone who tests positive?
Sure. The Eau Claire City County Health Department has said that, of course, earlier in September when we saw our we added 1,000 cases in September, like you said earlier, that a good chunk, I think over 50% of those cases were attributed or involved with UW-Eau Claire. They said that earlier in September. As of yesterday, the Eau Claire Health Department has said it's about a third of cases. A third of our cases since September 1st are related back to UW-Eau Claire. So that share is lessening. And Lisa Geezy, who is the director of the Eau Claire City County Health Department, said yesterday that we just the initial hit, you know, kids coming back into the community, they might have come from all over the country, and now they're kind of settling in. And she said that the circle of spread was kind of stopped there, but they're still, I think, being really watchful, really careful about, you know, how they handle any more big surges of cases, because we saw so many in September. And health officials have also said that the majority of those cases that they saw in Eau Claire County relating back to UW-Eau Claire in September, the majority of those were students who were living off campus. The majority were not students in the dorms. And I think that is a little harder to corral students maybe who live off campus for quarantine, for isolation, and for testing, you know, rather than getting to a student who lives on campus.
Rich, you've done a lot of reporting on how the pandemic has added new financial challenges to UW's system. We've seen furloughs. We've seen, in some cases, layoffs. Rich, you reported this week that tuition reserve funds are at their lowest levels since 2008. What's going on there, and what might that mean for Western Wisconsin campuses and students going forward?
Well, so tuition reserve funds are really just one small way to measure, I guess, overall financial situations on campus. It's just been something that I've focused on because UW system has this metric that if a tuition reserve fund, and this is essentially unspent money from tuition, and it's been described to me as like the freest pot of money for campuses to use for discretionary or, you know, whatever they like. There's all kinds of silos of funding that are locked up and committed. So I did a records request in June because I noticed that the UW system didn't put out those numbers when it did the year before. And I thought, well, you know, we've got a heck of a unprecedented situation. The reserves had been declining for years because lawmakers essentially forced them to spend them down. And I was just thinking, if reserves have continued to drop amid a pandemic with all kinds of unexpected costs, that could be a real situation. So I did the records request, and I found that, you know, UW Stout, as of June 30th, had a negative balance in its tuition reserve funds. But that number has changed. Like, the next day, they said they had $2 million. Still, going below zero as of June 30th has triggered what's called a spending plan. And, you know, UW Stout was dealing with financial issues already, but they're going to be doing some retirement buyouts and maybe restructuring the different colleges on campus to try to save money. And also this year, their enrollment has dropped by another 5%. The enrollment declines have really been driving financial issues for campuses, but not having those reserves is just another kind of handicap as they try to address that. So there's going to be some reductions at Stout, but also the pandemic has definitely played a role. The trick is, the tricky part is that the pandemic really hit the UW system at the tail end of its last financial quarter. And so the full financial effects of the pandemic won't be realized until next year at this time. But already we know that in the spring, when everything shut down, campuses refunded students for unused housing fees, unused dining. I mean, that was something to the tune of $70+ million, and that's a lot of money. I didn't realize how dependent universities are on housing and dining revenues and all these other fees, because tuition's been frozen for 8 years now, and it's just a large percentage of their budget. So it'll be interesting to see what the final numbers are next year. But it's been tough. Although the good news is that the campuses were able to get, I think it's something like $48 million from the Federal CARES Act, the stimulus, to kind of soften that blow. And the campuses use it differently. A lot of the money also went to grants, you know, need-based grants for students, which was also, you know, there was a lot of people in need in terms of family finances. So the full picture will take a while to be borne out, but definitely some of the campuses spent down their tuition reserve funds and some other reserve funds in order to address things like the refunds, loss of revenue, and also a lot of costs related to trying to purchase testing equipment, personal protective equipment, you know, hand sanitizer stations around every corner, that sort of thing.
That piece you did on tuition reserve funds is available at WPR.org. I recommend it highly. It's a very interesting piece. Rich, you also reported this week that technical and community colleges are seeing drops in enrollment this year. Usually when unemployment is high, and it has been high during this pandemic, enrollment goes up, but not in this case. The Chippewa Valley Technical College president, Bruce Barker, called this a whole different recession. What's different?
What's different is that people aren't ready to jump careers right now. President Barker said it very well. He said a lot of people are waiting to see if they'll get called back to their employers because, you know, in the typical, say, 2008, 2009, there was a lot of economic pain and people, you know, it was going to be long term. The whole thing with this recession that we're in right now is people don't know, you know, we've all heard about, is it going to be a V-shaped recovery, a K-shaped recovery, a Nike swoosh style recovery? President Barker mentioned that he thinks that some people are, you know, waiting to see if they'll get rehired essentially after being laid off temporarily. And that's a big question mark. The other thing that's keeping people out, according to some of the administrators at the tech colleges, is that there's a lot going on with people's families. You know, most of the students that go to tech colleges, they work, you know, full time. They've got families. They're generally not your typical 18 to 23 year old student. They're more like in their late 20s and early 30s. So there's a chance they've got families and a lot more commitments at home. The way it was described to me is, you know, if you've got so much more to do, those things that seem kind of optional get pushed off. So a lot of the tech colleges are seeing declines, and it's just atypical of what we normally see. But the people that I've talked to said that they've budgeted for this. They kind of expected declines. And the other thing is that they're waiting to see what happens when, you know, a vaccine comes out, or when things are a little more certain with regards to the virus itself, they fully expect that there could be a big jump in enrollment at these two-year campuses.
Rich, before we let you go, in the summer there was some doubt that the UW system and other higher education schools in the state would be able to pull off a full semester. Now that we're a few weeks in, are there any more doubts about that, or is that still an uncertainty?
I haven't really heard much more in terms of doubts about it. It was absolutely in question at the beginning. People thought it would be 2-3 weeks, and then the campuses would say, "All right, students, go home. It's all online." You know, we certainly saw the pauses at UW-Madison, UW-La Crosse, and UW-River Falls, but there's other campuses that have had very significant spikes. Platteville, for example. UW-Whitewater had a lot of high positivity rate, but they never went online. So it really appears to me that the system is just going to, you know, push through the semester. And at this point, I'll look at the data right now. The latest report from the UW system in terms of positivity rates at campuses, there isn't a single campus that's over 10%. And I mean, at the beginning of the semester, there were some campuses that were dealing with 20 and 30%. Of course, that all depends on how many tests were done. Mm-hmm. You know, a lower number of tests and a low number of positives can make a really big percentage. But testing is definitely ramped up, and the numbers seem to be pretty decent. I think the goal was, you know, ideally they want 5% or less positivity rate, you know, over a 7-day period or whatever. So they appear to be doing pretty well at this point.
Rich Kramer, thank you for joining us this morning. Rich Kramer covers Higher Education Beat for WPR and is based in Eau Claire. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We will continue. We'll come back on the other side of the break. We'll continue to talk about education, but on the in the public schools realm with our guests, Pierce County Public Health Director A.Z. Snyder and reporter Sarah Seifert of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram. We'd like to hear from you, too, about your 2020 experience in Western Wisconsin so far. 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or email ideas at WPR.org, ideas at WPR.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back talking about the state of the pandemic in western Wisconsin with A.Z. Snyder, Pierce County Public Health Director and a member of the board of the Western Wisconsin Public Health Readiness Consortium, and Sarah Seifert, the health and education reporter for the Leader Telegram. We've been talking about higher education, but now let's talk about public schools. And we've got a call. Our first caller for the day, Vern, is on, and that's what he wants to talk about. Vern, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. See, what people don't realize is this is a level 4 virus. In other words, you can't contain it unless you have a completely, like a hazmat suit. So they opened a school in Stanley. They have a prison here, so it's very high risk. Ventilation is everything. That's what they should have done in early January, whatever. Ron Kind was told this was level 4. So was Trump. So was Eau Claire County. They all ignored it. But a lot of these people, they send their kids to school there because they got to go to work. And we have a prison here, which increases risk. I went to Stanley the other day, and there are people not wearing masks. Some people are not reporting what's actually going on. And are sports really that important? Because that's transferring a lot of it. And like I said, we don't have the capacity to make our own mask in January or anywhere they're on. You get a medical-grade mask, and both people can wear them. That'll cut it down some, but it won't stop it.
Thank you, Vern. Sarah Seifert, as part of your education beat at the Leader Telegram, you've reported on the challenges of virtual learning for students, families, and school districts. Vern's saying, hey, level 4 virus, we shouldn't even be thinking about putting people in the schools. Eau Claire Area School District even pushed back the first day of virtual instruction school by a week because more students signed up than they were ready for. What are some of the challenges of online learning, and how are districts working to overcome them?
Yeah, and Vern brought up a really good point. You know, this has been one of the, I would say, one of the biggest conflicts, at least if you're a parent in the Chippewa Valley, you probably have an opinion about this, you know, whether or not schools should be back in, you know, back in session 5 days a week face-to-face, or if it just, you know, shut everything down, take it all online. Teachers have also been sort of a bigger voice in this as well. And you know, I've heard from a lot of teachers who said, you know, we just were worried. You know, we would prefer if everything was virtual. But like you said, virtual classes, at least the Eau Claire School District did see some pretty big issues with their virtual learning the first few weeks. You know, I talked to parents who said they hadn't gotten kids schedules, that they got schedules that had only 2 or 3 classes on them. You know, they got schedules that had classes that were at the same time. You know, a big thing that I heard was kids just weren't assigned enough to do in their virtual classes. You know, it also brings up the question of what do parents do if they both work? You know, if they're working, who's home to watch the kids, to help them with their homework, to keep them on their Zoom call? The school district has addressed a lot of that. Like you said, they postponed virtual learning by a week back in September, and that appeared to help. You know, they've said throughout all of this, don't blame our teachers. This is, you know, obviously an unprecedented year for us. And, you know, normally they would have the whole summer to kind of put schedules together, to plan this stuff. And that was crunched into a matter of 3 or 4 weeks because the school board didn't take the vote on you know, what class was going to look like until, you know, the later end of the summer. So they just had a lot less time. But yeah, it's a question. The virtual learning thing is a question that doesn't really seem to have a good answer, and I know parents are frustrated.
My neighbor has a kindergartner, and she was telling us the story that she's attending virtually, and the teachers are calling at 7 and 7:30 in the evening to get all of the one-on-one contact that they need to get with students. The president of the state's largest teachers union, the Wisconsin Education Association of Counselor, or WEAC, said this week that teachers are at the end of their rope, and that local districts should only hold in-person classes when their communities meet benchmarks set by the health experts. Sarah Seifert, what are you hearing from teachers?
I heard Ron Martin say that earlier this week, and what I've been hearing, at least from our local teachers, is that, you know, that they really want to be in touch with the kids, and that virtual learning is really hard for them. But they've said, you know, we need more support. Again, I think it's a question that doesn't really have that doesn't really have a good answer. But no, teachers are frustrated, and I think they're really just upset that they can't have that a lot of that face to face time with the kids that they're used to having in the classroom.
AZ Snyder, what's been the interaction between agencies like yours and the schools in trying to build something that works for education while still protecting public health? Or can that even be done?
So when we think about public health, we think about more than just stopping the infections from this virus. We also think about the social emotional aspects of the benefits that we see in schools. We are desperate to keep schools safe and open, especially for those younger children who really can't learn virtually or can't get the same level and quality of education virtually. However, we are also desperate to protect those teachers. What keeps me up at night, really more than anything else, is the idea of a teacher getting sick and dying of COVID-19. So we work with schools every day. In fact, just during this last hour, I've gotten at least 3 phone calls from superintendents wanting to talk to me. We work with them every day on this really delicate balancing act of protecting our community from COVID-19 and then also satisfying the preferences of our students and teachers. And I don't envy a superintendent. I think that is the toughest job in Wisconsin right now.
I want to share 3 headlines from 3 stories our reporters at WPR covered this week. And A.Z. Snyder, I'd like your response when I'm done reading these 3 headlines. Here's headline 1. Resigning Sauk County health officer says leaders rejected science, undermine pandemic response. Headline 2. La Crosse County health director tests positive for COVID-19. Headline 3. State epidemiologist says local health departments, quote, cracking under the strain, end quote, of coronavirus spread. A.Z. Snyder, your response to those headlines, is that what your life looks like right now?
I'm so glad you brought this up. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about these 3 really important but related topics. So I first want to say that I went through new health officer training with Tim, the health officer in Sauk County, and I would struggle to find a more conscientious and kind health officer. I think it's very unfortunate that health officers are being personally attacked for using science and good judgment and our very rigorous backgrounds in order to help our communities make the best decisions possible. I am so thankful that in Pierce County, my board has been incredibly supportive and protective of me and the health department, but that has not been the case for all county health officers in Wisconsin. People need to remember that we are trying to protect them. We are trying to help them. We gain nothing beneficial from this pandemic. We, more than anyone else, wish it was over, but we have a duty to protect our citizens, and that's why we're putting ourselves forward and making sure that we speak up for the science. I do want to address Jen Rumbalski's recent diagnosis. She's the health officer for La Crosse. I think what this points out is that anyone can get coronavirus, no matter how careful you are. When there's this level of disease in the community and we're all interconnected, it's going to happen. We wish Jen a speedy recovery, and I think it's a good reminder to not blame people when they're infected. It's not usually their fault. And I do want to say that, yes, local health departments are strained as we never have been before. And although we've received funding, certainly to assist with contact tracing, it's impossible to scale up a system that has been underfunded and abused for decades in the matter of a few months to deal with a global pandemic. And I hope one of the lessons learned from this is we're tough little health departments, but we can't be so little anymore because the next pandemic is likely coming. And if we don't use this as an opportunity to scale up local capacity, we won't be able to withstand the next one.
Let's talk about the impact COVID-19 has had on the economy. On Tuesday, the governor announced $100 million in aid for Wisconsin small businesses. Same day, he announced a mandate limiting many businesses to 25% capacity. Sarah Seifert, we've seen unemployment rate recover somewhat from the record highs in April, but how's the economy of Western Wisconsin doing, and what is this mandate going to mean when we're getting into colder weather, when we can't be gathering outdoors as easily?
I think it's going to make it really tough. You know, we've seen pushback from small business organizations, from small businesses themselves, for this new gathering mandate from Tony Evers' administration. I think once the weather starts getting colder, it's going to make it a lot harder to go for a walk in Phoenix Park or have a socially distanced bonfire in the backyard with the neighbors. I think that, summer was kind of the easy part, and health officials have been warning folks, trying to prepare folks for the fact that this is going to get a lot harder. There's been some national studies and some national headlines on the role of bars and restaurants in spreading the virus. For an earlier brought up ventilation, that's also been something that I think businesses across the country have been exploring, the role of that. But yeah, it really just comes down to, and with our inhospitable Wisconsin weather in November through April, it's going to be tough, especially with this 25% capacity rule from the Evers administration.
Yeah, colder weather, winter right around the corner. Halloween is around the corner. How do we do that? Outdoor gathering options may be limited or out of the question. And holidays are coming up, too, where people gather with family and friends traditionally. AZ Snyder, has your office had capacity to think about preparing, handling the pandemic during the winter and holiday seasons?
We absolutely have. We do have some resources on our social media for Halloween, just because it's during the pandemic doesn't mean we can't enjoy our Halloween. I have staff with young children who are thinking about creative ways to do that. One of my staff members is going to set up trick-or-treating stations inside her house for her young kids to do some in-house trick-or-treating, which I thought was a very good idea. But these holidays are going to be like we've never had before. I know myself, I really enjoy eating Thanksgiving dinner, not so much cooking it, but my husband is an excellent cook. And we're going to be making a turkey and a full dinner and boxing it up in individual portions and bringing it over to our grandparents and just dropping it off and enjoying the meal with them over Zoom rather than in person.
Feels like there are about 20 topics that we haven't gotten to yet. I do wonder, Sarah Seifert, if you have in 30 seconds, as we're looking ahead to the future, what are some things that this coronavirus is going to be bringing to us that you're going to be reporting on?
I think that's a really good question. I think a big part of my job in the next few months is going to be looking at how the flu season, influenza, is going to just explode this COVID-19 conversation in Western Wisconsin. I think the Chippewa Valley has been behind other parts of the state in terms of the virus really ramping up, but health officials and doctors have just said over and over that they are really, really concerned about, they're calling it a twindemic. We're in a pandemic right now, and the flu season just really coming in brutally this winter. We have hospitalizations and deaths from the flu every winter, and that could really that might not play well with how COVID-19 is affecting our community. So that is something that we're really going to be looking at, and I think your listeners are going to hear a lot of that from health officials over the next few months.
Thanks so much for being with us. Sarah Seifert is the voice you just heard, the health and education reporter for the Leader Telegram. Thank you, Sarah Seifert.
Thanks for having me.
And we also had AZ Snyder for the hour. She's the Pierce County Public Health Director and a member of the board of the Western Wisconsin Public Health Readiness Consortium. AZ Snyder, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Get your flu shot, everybody.
Earlier in this hour, we heard from Rich Kramer, WPR's reporter on higher education. Producer for today's show, Catherine Thomas, Patrick Eikens, and Kate Spranger manage publicity and the archives. Transcriptionists are Sue Johnson and Bonnie Clark. Thanks for listening. Be safe. I'm Dean Kallenbach. And you've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.